everyone, welcome back to Making the Game, from Concept to Kickstarter. I'm your host, Reese, and in episode 5, we will talk about the process of getting your pledges into the pledge manager, what the pledge manager is, talk about some of the things we learned in the process, and also discuss where we are at in the development process of Bloodthrone. So first of all, what is a pledge manager and why do you need one? The pledge manager basically allows you to finalize the process of taking in a pledge on a crowdfunding campaign. So Kickstarter specifically, which was the company that largely created the crowdfunding space as we know it today, does not have an inbuilt pledge manager, although thankfully they announced recently that they would be adding one onto their offering, which frankly, it's bizarre that they hadn't made that a higher priority because it would make them extra money. And it's also annoying as a creator to have to use multiple platforms. So when the backer gets ready to finalize their pledge, they have to put in all the information regarding shipping, potential taxes, maybe they want to change something in their order, maybe they want to add something to their order, or people that missed the crowdfunding campaign have another opportunity to go in and back it during the pledge manager. In short, you have to have some sort of software like this in order to manage all of the various, you know, logistical aspects of getting the backer what they want, where they want it. So it's really important. You want to make sure to do a lot of research. There's quite a few options to choose from. So you want to make sure you find the one that looks like it'll be the best fit for you. So the most popular options are GameFound's Pledge Manager and BackerKit, which was, as I understand it, the first software of this nature that was used to manage pledges after a crowdfunding campaign. Both of these companies also have their own crowdfunding platforms. GameFound has become more and more popular, specifically in the tabletop gaming vertical. They recently signed an exclusive deal with CMON, Cool Mini or Not, who is like a crowdfunding juggernaut. They've done, I don't know, like 60 or something crazy like that. They seem to be doing them like every month or even multiple a month. And then also Awaken Realms owns GameFound. Awaken Realms is a really, really interesting company. I really admire what they've done. We'll probably do a whole episode just talking about them, but they created the platform and they're famous for making some of the most popular independently launched board games out there, like Nemesis, which currently has raised about $16 million. It's a bit of an eye-watering number, but congratulations to them. They have a host of very successful board games, also several video games now, so they've really hit it out of the park. It's very impressive. BackerKit, their crowdfunding platform, as I understand it, is much smaller. I looked at it before I did the podcast just for my notes, and they definitely have some projects on it. They have a couple that are pretty big ticket, but it certainly seems like they are one of the smaller choices, or they have a smaller audience for consideration as a crowdfunding platform. Now, I don't know the exact specifics, but I know GameFound initially was offering their service without any sort of a service fee. It was kind of like when Venmo was trying to get into the market to compete with PayPal, they weren't charging anything. And they were doing that just to build up a customer base. So GameFound now does charge, but it's only 3% as opposed to 5% with a company like Kickstarter. BackerKit, I don't know what their pricing model is, but it may be worth poking around. You might be able to find one that is a little bit cheaper than Kickstarter. However, you have to bear in mind, you know, who has the biggest audience, right? Like, where do you think you're going to have the most success? And that's why we chose GameFound, is they're not as big as Kickstarter, but their audience is almost exclusively like board games, tabletop gaming, things of that nature. So it's a more concentrated audience. And they, in my opinion, GameFound's layout is a lot more user-friendly. It looks better than Kickstarter. But as I'll explain here in a second, the back end, not as user-friendly. It's much, Kickstarter is easier to use on the back end than GameFound, but GameFound looks better on the front end, the customer-facing portion of it. And I'll dive into some specifics there, but based in a nutshell, what we thought with GameFound is that we would get introduced into a new audience of potential customers. So the thought process was, hey, we'll use Kickstarter to run the initial campaign. We'll use GameFound for the pledge manager. GameFound also offers stretch pay, which allows the backer to pay over time. You have control over how many payments they can potentially make. We went with 6. So it just helps it makes it more accessible, right? Like it'll increase the number of backers that you get. Because if somebody is on the fence because of price or maybe they have budgetary restrictions at that point in time, this makes it easier for them to say, you know what, I can do this if I pay basically like layaway, right? Like I'll pay for it over 6 months or whatever the case may be. So as I was doing research on this, kind of going back and forth between GameFound and BackerKit, I talked to some of my friends in the industry who've been doing this for years and years. One of my really good buddies has been in the crowdfunding tabletop vertical for over a decade. He's worked on some of the big name properties. He currently works for Asmodee, actually, a great dude. And he prefers BackerKit, but when I was digging into it, like, okay, why do you feel that way? It came down to really, it was just what he was familiar with. It was the platform he'd been using for a long time. So I think it comes down to personal preference. Like, obviously, go in and do some research, talk to a rep from the companies, get a good idea for where you want to go, and then make a decision from there. GameFound, as I was saying, on the back end is pretty hard to use. Just some like little stuff, like getting the images to move around in a block. A block is like a section of the front end of the site. Sometimes just moving an image was like infuriatingly difficult to do. So there's little things like that. In talking to other people in the industry, that sentiment was mirrored from a lot of folks. It's like GameFound looks more polished on the front end. I think it's easier for the customer to use. Bigger images. I think the layout is more aesthetically pleasing. It's also easier to follow as compared to Kickstarter. But the back end is certainly challenging. Now, that said, they have really good customer service. So anytime I hit a roadblock, there was someone there that was extremely responsive, that was able to help. Like I said last episode, there's a little bit of a language barrier. They're a Polish company, but I didn't really feel it, right? Like, it was very minor. So I think it's a good choice. But now with Kickstarter coming out with their own pledge manager, it might be the easier choice just to stick with one platform, right? Like, hey, I'm just going to go to GameFound and do my campaign and my pledge manager there. Again, they charge less than Kickstarter. 2% isn't a huge difference, but if you're doing like big numbers, it can add up. If you're just beginning, probably not that big of a deal. 2% isn't going to make or break you. Kickstarter still does have the bigger audience. And now that they're doing their own pledge manager, I think it's going to impact all these other companies pretty severely. I think some of them might actually go out of business, because they exist because they were filling a void in the crowdfunding sort of cycle that Kickstarter wasn't. But now that people can just go to Kickstarter, run their campaign and their pledge manager, there may not be a need for some of these other companies. So I think unfortunately we might see some of them go under. I apologize for the puppy in the background barking. So what to expect from a pledge manager beyond just handling the logistics and making it easier for you to get the correct product to the customer wherever they are in the world and handle all the shipping and the taxes and the import fees and all that sort of stuff, which is very complex. If you were trying to figure that out on your own, it would be very difficult. GameFound has that all set up. It is fairly complex, and I know that there's been some big companies like Cephalofair Games who do Gloomhaven Frosthaven that they had to go in and issue people refunds because there was like some setting that wasn't correct and they overcharged on the shipping. For us in one country, that happened too. Thankfully, there wasn't a ton of backers in that country. Well, not thankfully. I wish there were more, but from resolving the problem, it makes it a little bit easier. Where for whatever reason, they didn't divide up the countries in the correct way. I won't bore you with the super specific details, but in a nutshell, you want to make sure you go in there and you like understand all the shipping part of it beforehand. And I've said that again. I've said that in previous podcasts. I'm going to continue to say it over and over again, because that is the area where you are the most likely to step on a landmine in this whole process. So really, really, really figure that out before you do anything else. Like, focus on the logistics before anything else, before even you have the idea for the game. I know that sounds silly and it's unrealistic, but that's how important it is. Another thing to note is getting all the information into the pledge manager in regards to like graphic assets, text, etc. There are subtle differences between the different platforms. For example, the image size to aspect ratio for Kickstarter was slightly different than GameFound, and that ended up taking a lot more time than we had anticipated of just resizing like every image, right? Like little things like that can really eat up a ton of time. So again, you want to start working on this way before you're ready to go live with your crowdfunding campaign. So we made the mistake of putting it off the pledge manager until the campaign was already going. because we didn't think it would be that difficult to do. But, you know, due to lack of experience, and I mentioned this in the last podcast, that really delayed us. It caused it to take longer to get the pledge manager open than it should have. So you want to make sure it's all set up ahead of time. And then you're like, oh, wow, I have to go in and resize, you know, 50 different images. And we had all these like rotating GIFs and all this stuff that we had to change. And it just takes a lot of time. It's not difficult. It's just tedious, right? So you just need to, you don't want to be behind the eight ball trying to do all these things. So make sure you look into all that sort of stuff too when you're choosing a pledge manager. Go in there and mess around with it. You know, like set up an account and just try to upload some pictures and just get a feel for it so that you don't get taken by surprise when you're in the middle of trying to make everything happen. So once you've selected your pledge manager and you've run through your campaign, the next step is to upload all the pledge data from the crowdfunding platform that you use. Now, again, if you're just, for example, using GameFound and then you use the pledge manager, it's super easy. You don't have to do anything. That's the benefit of having one singular platform. But if you're doing what a lot of people do and you have Kickstarter and say BackerKit, you need to export all the pledge data and then upload it into the new platform. Now, I didn't use BackerKit, so I don't know how that one works. But with GameFound, it was actually a lot more complex and a little bit frustrating, more so than I had anticipated. What I mean by that is we had to take all the data, export it from Kickstarter, reformat it into a very, very specific format for GameFound, and then upload it. And I don't know what the deal was. I'm not an idiot. I use spreadsheets every day for work. I'm not a level 20 spreadsheet wizard by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm way more advanced than most people. It took me like a week to finally get it all the data to upload and to be accurate. I don't know why it's so difficult. Do you think they could run a script that would make, they would just read the export from Kickstarter and then put it into the correct format for GameFound? If they have the technical savvy to build the platform itself, you would think that wouldn't be too difficult. And I imagine that a huge chunk of their business comes from Kickstarter. But that critique aside, their customer service was extremely responsive, really good. They helped me to finally get it figured out. And a pro tip, if you're doing it the way we did, we go Kickstarter to GameFound, and you're planning on doing that, let your backers on Kickstarter know in advance not to use an Apple ID associated email, because for whatever reason, they won't upload correctly into GameFound. So we had to go in and manually change all those. It was a pain in the butt for us, for the backer, for everyone. It was pretty annoying. So that's just a good tip to have going into it, so that you can avoid having to do a bunch of sort of tedious manual work. The pledge manager, unlike the crowdfunding campaign, is a little bit more fluid in regards to timelines. So what I mean by that is a crowdfunding campaign has a set start and end date. And I do want to talk in greater depth about how long is the appropriate length for a Kickstarter campaign. I'm not really convinced that 30 days is the best unless you're a really big company. I think if when you're getting started, a shorter one is probably better, but we'll dig into that more in a future episode. But on the pledge manager, you can let it run really indefinitely. I mean, I've talked to people in the industry that have told me there are companies that basically use it like a web cart, right? Like they just always have the pledge manager open for their game and people can just go in and buy it. So that's kind of a clever little workaround if you have limited resources. Our company uses Shopify for our web cart, which we built up to it. It's our third web cart. Shopify is more expensive, but it's amazing. However, when you're just getting going, you don't need, you know, basically an enterprise level solution that's very expensive because you're not bringing enough revenue to justify it. So that's a cool little tip that I learned when I was at the Gamma convention that I was like, oh, that's interesting. You could literally just let it run indefinitely and use it as a web cart. That was kind of cool. But most of you out there who are considering doing this, and like, we don't plan on doing that. Our plan was to let the pledge manager run until we went into production. So once we actually start the production run of the game, we'll probably shut it down. So that way it gives us time to like get the final numbers, get everything figured out, go into production, which takes about a month, and then shipping time where it goes from the factory into a cargo container or multiple if you've had a really successful campaign, over the ocean, through customs, to wherever it is you're going to be fulfilling from. In our case, we have our own warehouse, so we'll fulfill it ourselves. And then from there, it goes to the customers. So we'll talk about the logistics of that in a future episode. I know I keep saying that, but there's just so much ground to cover, and I don't want to have these episodes become too long, but we'll talk about that in greater depth in the future, because if you haven't done it before, it is, it's fairly complicated, but we ship international freight frequently, so we're really experienced with it, and there's a lot of little, like, nuanced ins and outs to be aware of, but you can let the Pledge Manager run for as long as you want, and just let people know. Let them know, like, hey, like, it's roughly going to end on this date. And then when you start to get it narrowed down, you can say, like, okay, it's for sure going to end on this date. And that way people that are on the fence or still considering it have time to make the decision to back the project. So sometimes what I've noticed is that we had a lot of people on our Kickstarter that did the $1 pledge to get access to the Pledge Manager. And I think it's because people are just kind of, like, waiting and seeing how things are going. There's been a lot of Kickstarters in the board gaming industry or just in general that fail to deliver, or they're massively delayed, et cetera. So people have some, you know, hesitancy, which is fair. It's understandable. So I think sometimes people want to keep an eye on it. They want to get notifications. Like, yeah, I'll throw a dollar in here and we'll see how things go. So when you're in the Pledge Manager phase, you want to continue to do promotions. You want to continue to get the word out there, make sure that you're still communicating with backers. I've been trying to post an update every 2 weeks or more, just to, like, let everybody know, like, hey, this is where we're at, this is what we're doing, so that you can be transparent and keep everybody informed. And I think that will help a lot. From what I can see, it's when companies stop communicating with backers that things really start to go sideways, which is understandable. Like, if you're like, oh, I invested into this project, what's going on? And people don't respond, that's understandably going to cause a lot of friction. Another thing that I have learned in the process of doing it is, for most people, you assume that you can get the game or the product that you're working on mostly done, do the crowdfunding campaign, the Pledge Manager, and then kind of continue to finish it or fine tune it. I mean, really, the Kickstarter or the crowdfunding process is supposed to be, here's the idea, and then get the money to do it and then bring it to life. Now, that's not really the way it works in reality anymore. A lot of the companies out there that are large and are using these platforms the most successfully, they're coming to it with a finished product, right? So I came into it thinking, like, oh, get as much done as we possibly can. And in our case, it was almost a done game. Now, some of the parts of it are really expensive, like making the molds for the miniatures and things of that nature. You probably don't have the money to do up front. And that's what the crowdfunding campaign is for. But what I mistakenly thought was, oh, okay, once the crowdfunding campaign is over, the Pledge Manager is running, I'll have tons of time just to focus on finishing the game. Well, managing the crowdfunding campaign, the Pledge Manager, and all the weird little logistical things of, like, customer service, not that that's, you know, obviously that's extremely important, but it's a lot more time consuming than I thought it would be. There's less time to focus on development than I had thought there would be. So again, you want to front load it as much as possible. You're going to hear me say this, like, over and over and over again throughout this process. Just try to get as much done ahead of time as you possibly can so that you can focus fully on the thing that you're doing when you're doing it as much as is reasonably possible. Now for an update on where Bloodthrone is currently at in the development process. So big news, and I will be posting pictures of this soon. I just early in the week got all of the mass production models. So for the core game, and the Gorgontas expansion, he's the big giant mega boss expansion. They're all done and they look amazing. So they're PVC plastic, a little bit softer than HIPS plastic, which is high impact polystyrene. That's the kind of plastic that's used in, like, a lot of model kits, like Games Workshop, some Gundams and things of that nature. It's very hard, has really sharp edges. PVC is more cost effective to produce. It's easier to come out of the mold. It's much, much easier to have them pre-assembled, which our models are. So that was why we went with that, and we'll go fully into that in the future. But I'm stoked. The models look amazing. They're better than I was even hoping they would be. I think people are going to be really, really pleased with them when they get their hands on them. And like I've been saying, some of them are gigantic. Like, Gorgontas is huge. People are going to be really, really thrilled when they see the quality of the models specifically, in the game in general. So that's a big milestone. We're currently working on the molds for the expansion heroes. So because of the way everything worked out with the campaign, most of the backers got the hero expansion. And it may make more sense for us just to have it all ship at the same time. So we're still working all that out. and I'll be totally transparent with that as we go through the process. But if it ends up that it all fits in one container, it's smarter just to wait and not pay the very expensive freight shipping twice. But that's a big milestone. That's the hardest part of the core game is done, and we're well into it on the expansion heroes as well. Some of the things that I've learned that are taking longer to do than I thought, things that I just, you know, because of a lack of experience, I didn't think it would be really very difficult, like the plastic organizer trays. I thought those would be really simple to make because I've seen vacuum molded plastic done. I've been in Guangzhou, China, where they're doing it before. My company works with various factories in China already. And it didn't seem like all that complex of a process, but it turns out I was wrong. To make those organizer trays could take up to 6 weeks. So, you know, that may cause a slight delay in our timeline. Also, the rule books have taken significantly longer than I thought. Again, with experience, I think it'll be way, way easier in the future because I'll know, like, I'll have all this a priori knowledge of, like, oh, okay, I need to do things this way, this way, this way. Plus figuring out, like, oh, key rules terms, do we want them bolded? Do we want them in a different font? Do we want them to be uppercase, all caps? You know, working these sorts of things out has taken a lot longer than I thought it would. Because when you have everything like in a Google Doc, which is how I do it, and it makes sense in that format, then you put it into a book format where it's in dual columns, and then you have to have room for graphic assets on the page. It changes the way it looks, and you're like, oh man, oh, maybe we should change, or maybe we should do this or that instead. So that has taken longer than I had anticipated. We still have some 2D art that's coming in that took longer than anticipated, although it's really good. The quality is really, really good. You know, it's not, you know, Frank Farzetta, Brom level, but, you know, there's a handful of artists in the world ever who have been on that level. But I'm really, really happy with it. I think people are going to be very stoked. It's going to look much, much better than your average board game rule book because what we're trying to build is it's a whole world, right? Like we have a whole backstory. Our lore doc is well over 300 pages. We've been working on it for several years. So we want to come at this with more than just like, oh, hey, this is a rule book for a board game. We want to draw people into the setting. So that's why we're trying to go the extra mile on the layout for the book. And there's all these things that I didn't think about, like, okay, what are the backgrounds going to be? What are all the little iconography and all these little symbols and things that you need all throughout the book to spice it up so it's not just blocks of text? Okay, and then when you're making those, you want to have a consistent tone. You want it to be recognizably Blood Throne. You want it to match the overall feel of the game itself. So that all took longer than I thought. It's not as simple as writing the rules and then putting it into a PDF. If you want it to be very polished, that last, you know, 10% of effort to go from good to great takes as much time as the initial 90% did. And when I'm learning that now, going forward, obviously it'll be easier, but you know, things as simple as like the hero sheets, which are sheets that I created for every hero in the game to make it very easy to level them up in an analog format. Now, me drawing that out in, you know, Google, in Microsoft Paint, which is the way I did it, and, oh, okay, this all makes sense. Now it's like you go to the layout professional and you're like, okay, now I need this to look good and for it also to make sense to a layperson that doesn't have all the knowledge of how everything is supposed to work in their head. So we're finishing that. We're well into the process. Like the document is all written. We're just now going through the polishing phase, like, oh, okay, I need this to correspond to the mission. We need the sticker to be easily attributable to the scenario, and where does that go on the map? That needs to be very clearly laid out, and all of these sorts of things, like communicating all of that mechanic stuff to the end user so that it's easy. That has proven to be a little bit more time consuming than I had originally thought, because I put the vast majority of the time into just writing the rules and testing everything and like all the mechanical back end stuff. Now the front end, the polished part, the UI, so to speak, is all new to me. And so that's taken longer than anticipated, but it's been fun. It's been a fun process to see it go from like a Google Doc to a very nice looking, polished looking rulebook. And one other tip that I had gotten that it's brilliant, and I'm going to work really hard to try and get this done, is to put QR codes in the rulebook so that when you're reading the rules, you're like, okay, how does movement work? And then you could just scan it on your phone and you could see a video example of me moving the models around. So I don't know if I have time to get a QR code for each like individual rule section. Ideally, that is what I would like to do. But at the very least, I will have all those individual videos on the YouTube channel for the game. But I don't know if we'll be able to get that into the book. At the very least, what we will have is a QR code in the book that says, scan this and it'll take you to the YouTube channel, to the section of the channel where it's like, here is a, you know, 1 minute video on how to move models. Here's a 30 second video on how to do the dice and all that sort of stuff. And I think that'll really, really make it easy for people to upload the rules to the game while they're going through the rule book. And, you know, the hardest part of a new game is learning it, right? Like, it's exciting. You buy it and then you get it and you're like, ah, crap, I got to learn the rules and then I got to teach other people the rules. So I want to make that as absolutely as easy as possible. So get excited to see pictures of the actual mass production models for the Core Box and the Gorgontis expansion, as well as some of the 2D art that I'm really pleased with. Like I said, it took longer to get it done than we had thought, but the quality, I think, totally justifies it. Really, really excited to show that off to people so that they can get a better idea of what Bloodthrone is all about. So that's it for this week's episode. Still so much to talk about. Thank you for joining me so far on this journey. Thank you to everyone that backed us on the campaign. We have a growing team, and it was a dream come true to see it come to life, to see people believe in it. If you still wanted to back the project, you can just head over to GameFound, look up Bloodthrone. You can just do a Google search, Bloodthrone GameFound, and you can back it at this point in time. And get excited. I'll be posting some updates with pictures of the new stuff really soon, and I should have an example of the rulebook, a couple pages from the rulebook very soon as well. Like, a lot of it's done, but we're just really just trying to polish it, and that way I can put it out there for people to see what they're getting. Thank you very much for joining me for episode 5 of the podcast, and I look forward to speaking to all of you next week. Again, if you have any questions, please make sure to leave them as a comment, and I will address them in future episodes.